No, he won't take it, said a voice out loud. No, we won't take it, we will stand our ground. No.
Welcome to the Sarah Schultz Show, where we the people are now in session. We have another great show coming up for you today. In the first hour, I have Yuri Raskin with Defend Wisconsin Weekly News Roundup. Then I'll have Harry Trivedi, who is the independent candidate running for governor. Following Mr. Trivedi, I will have Jenna Pope on. She's a local Madison activist and community organizer. She's going to discuss her arrest and the outcome of her trial for her protesting last August. And I will finish out the hour with Arthur Cole Riggs to discuss his camera incident. In the start of the second hour, I will start off with Jeff and Lisa from Blogging Blue. We'll be talking about their problems with the right-wing media consortium in Wisconsin and toxic media's effect on this state and across the country. And I'll finish out the hour with Kevin Kane from Citizen Action Wisconsin. We'll be talking about the Affordability Health Care Act, Walker's removal of the cap on family care, and the GOP's war on women. Actually, on women's health, I should say. We're going to focus on health care for the last half hour. The phone number to call in if you have any questions, comments, or concerns is 877-497-1797 or 310-742-1896. I also have a live discussion online at blogtalkradio.com. You can go on there. You can post your comments or questions that you may have about the show. Now, before we get into the show, I have a quick formatting announcement. We're going to add a little more breaks to the show and some extra music. So I'll have a little more music, a little more downtime, a little bit of breaks in between because we do cover a lot of topics and we cover a lot of information. So I'm going to try to break it up so we can have a little bit of off time in between so you can get all the stuff that we're talking about. Also, I wanted to start focusing on some local music. I'd love to get some Milwaukee music, some Madison music, Wisconsin music, protest songs in particular, but even if they're not protests, just get some local acts out there because I think we've got a lot of talent in Wisconsin that just don't get a chance to be showcased. So that's a little formatting note for everybody. So when you don't be surprised when we start having the breaks and start having the music. Now I'd like to welcome Yuri Raskin from Defend Wisconsin Weekly News Roundup. Good morning, Yuri. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know, I just love the idea of a little more music, probably because I'm a musician. And I think that bringing some, you know, of course it's good for you to catch your breath once in a while, but it's also good to have some opportunity to showcase local talent. I think it's a great idea. I love it.
Thank you. You're making my producer very excited because this was, I'll have to admit, this was more Bill's idea than mine. And it took some time for me to get used to it, but I think it's going to go over really well. And Bill is never going to let me forget this. So thank you, Yuri, for making his day.
Sarah, music is a good thing.
It is. You know, for someone, I was a music minor. You'd think I would have pushed it more earlier. So.
Oh, music minor, music major. There's some music jokes in there.
There is. It's got to be there, and I'm sure someone can post it on the chat room. What's going on in the week for Wisconsin news?
Well, I think we're glad to report that the Fitzwalker stand is gradually coming to an end. We no longer have the brothers Fitzgerald running the show anymore in our state because we have one of them that's running for United States Senate, Jeff, and so he's no longer in charge of the assembly. And Scott Fitzgerald effectively lost his leadership position when Senator Pam Galloway stepped down, and so now it's a 16-16 split in there. So we have at least that part of the Fitzwalker stand done with, and so now we will see what happens with the recall. I think that's a very good development for our state. Just the fact that the assembly is done for a while is a very good development for our state right there.
Yes. The fact that we're out of session, and normally I wouldn't say that because I, you know, there's a lot of good that has come from sessions in the past, but the fact that we're out of session for this time makes me able to breathe a little easier now.
Exactly. In the meantime, we have former Senator, State Senator Randy Hopper, who is on trial right now for OWI, gave a tearful testimony and said that the county workers were out to get him when he was pulled over and arrested for drunken driving. But he's charged with drunken driving, operating left of the central lane, and they're refusing to take a test for intoxication after arrest. and he was pulled over on October 16th while he and his girlfriend were driving back from a Green Bay Packers game. This would be decided by a six-person jury. Don't you wish you were part of the jury, Sarah?
Oh, it would be interesting. A little fly on the wall there. It was interesting because I was listening to his testimony, and he was saying how it wasn't just the workers, it was everybody was out to get him, and that he actually apparently he felt he had passed his sobriety test, and he had all these other things. It was pretty amazing, really, the testimony that he gave. And the girlfriend is still that. I believe she's still a lobbyist, is she not? Still working for the Walker regime.
I just think it's maybe there's something to be said for his point of everybody's out to get him, considering that he was recalled by his own constituents. I think there were quite a few people out to get him, and they did it in the right way by voting him out. The rest, got to take personal responsibility, and I think OWI was in a good opportunity for him to show that he can do that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was going to say it's interesting that they're, especially Randy Hopper and the side that he tends to support tends to want to say personal responsibility, but all of a sudden when it's time for them to take personal responsibility, oh, it's all their fault, they're out to get me. It's interesting how that plays out.
Well, absolutely. It's personal responsibility until it's my turn, and then it's everybody else's fault. Oh, well, at least he's not a state senator anymore, and it's interesting how things can change rather quickly. Fitzwalker stand, majority, Senator Hopper, all of this is now in a past. It's a beautiful summer day in Wisconsin. Oh, wait, it's March.
Wait. is still a beautiful summer day in Wisconsin in March.
I was thinking about it. I had no idea that global warming could be so welcomed in Wisconsin.
I know. It's quite amazing.
It is. Continuing on with the news.
Yeah, let's do that because I was going to say something, but it really doesn't need to be said. So let's continue on with the news.
Oh, that's a perfect time to play a song. No, just kidding. Let's see. We have court that strikes down GOP redistricting and orders two districts redrawn. That's kind of a mixed bag, I would say, because on one hand, both sides can claim victory because except for two districts, the current redistricting stands. On the other hand, there are two districts where court found violations, and those two districts will be redrawn. The question, of course, is how is it going to affect other districts, because you can't just redraw two districts without touching another district or more. So that, I think there's still going to be appeals, and this is not necessarily over, but we do have a new development there, and it is partial victory there.
And it was interesting, my understanding of it was that the judge said he wasn't fond of how it was written, but all but those two districts were constitutional.
And from what I saw in that opinion, it sounded very much like, reality has a liberal bias. What was written by the court was distinctly pointing to the fact that this was not the right way to do it, but at the same time, there isn't that much that the court can do. And so this is a case, there's some things that were so blatantly, obviously violating law that the court was able to step in. I still like the idea of a nonpartisan redistricting approach, and I hope that at some point we're going to, as people, going to back that up, because it seems like whatever party is in power at the time strongly supports having the ability to do the redistricting, when it would be really nice if whatever party is in power supported a nonpartisan approach. But I guess this is one of those things that politicians have a difficult time saying, which is first you get the power and then you have to give it away to somebody else. That seems to be a practically impossible thing these days.
Unless you're the governor, then they will give you the power, because that's what the legislature did to the governor.
That's a good point, because, he's our governor, and we should all respect him because he was elected or something like that.
Yeah, and apparently he'll be in office forever, so it would be okay, and the power's not going to flip-flop at all, and all the power you've given is, you know, going to just go with him, I guess. I still haven't figured out why they did that.
It's because their logic is flawed. That's why it's difficult to figure it out. Because they know it's just a mess of a bunch of stuff that helps us right now. So we're going to throw it together, and then if you try to figure it out, you're the one who's going to get the headache. So moving on, because we will never figure that one out all the way out, we have a primary that's descending on a presidential, a Republican primary that's descending on Wisconsin in the next few days. And, of course, that presents a wonderful opportunity because the circus is in town. We have Mrs. Romney in Madison, and she's instantly somebody tries to give her an Etch-a-Sketch, and somebody's following her with a car that has a dog crater, travel crater, whatever crate on top attached because of the infamous Mitt Romney driving the dog on top of his car to Canada. The dog that incidentally ran away after that, go figure. But the circus is in town. I think the really important implication here is that this is going to take place on the same day as our spring local election. And so if you have somebody that is running in the local area, you need to really support them because the Republican voter turnout is going to be fairly heavy because people are going to be there voting for, you know, Mitt Romney, Rick Santorum, whatever. And so Democratic-leaning or progressive candidates, however you want to call them, will need all the support they can get in order to be competitive in our local elections. Madison, because our primary used to be in February. Even 4 years ago, you may recall with Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, we had a primary, presidential primary in February. Well, now it is on the same day as our local election. So get out there, vote for your candidates, and if you're going to be out because it's spring break, then make sure to vote absentee, which is really, really important because it's those local elections where we get the candidates for future races.
Well, it's just important to go out and exercise your rights anyway. There's a lot of countries that have fought and died. A lot of people in our history have fought and died for the right for everyone to go out and vote. Women, African-Americans, it doesn't really matter. Someone has fought for this right, and it's just important that you exercise your right and you have a say, and this is a way to have a say in the government. And if you don't think your vote counts, just wait until you get to a local race that gets tied. Or your candidate, whichever one you wanted, loses by one vote, and you weren't the one that went out to vote. So,
well, what can I
your
say? In that case, it's just important to draw the right card.
That's true, but it would be better if it didn't get to that point. Everyone just went out and voted, and hopefully, if it's a tie, it's a tie. But hopefully, if you went out and voted, you'll be able to get your candidate in.
Absolutely. Let's see. We also have a conservative group that is asking for investigation of judges who signed recall petitions, and there's 29 of them, 29 circuit court judges engaged, they claim, engaged in misconduct by allegedly signing recall petitions against Scott Walker. And I used to think that judges were people too. So they were allowed to sign recall petitions, letters, or anything else they wanted to sign. They probably signed things all day long to begin with. So, but of course, this is Fitzwalkerstan or Walkerstan or whatever you want to call it right now. And boy, if you're not following the party line, if you're stray then or deviate, well, then there's going to be punishment and you're going to be investigated by your own people if need be. So,
we're going to talk. Sorry to cut you off. We're going to talk about that a little bit later with Jeff and Lisa as well. We'll mention that because I found the same write-up put out in two different ways is pretty interesting. Well, we have one more minute left, Yuri. What's coming down the pike for next week?
Well, the one thing that I really have to mention for all the social media folks that are listening out there, Stephanie, I Will Get More Likes Than Scott Walker, a very popular page, and my campaign, we're holding a joint birthday bash campaign fundraiser together. And so I invite everyone to join us in Madison on Friday, March 30th at the Fountain from 6:30 p.m. until who knows when, to come and hang out and have, you know, say happy birthday to Stephanie and help out my campaign as I run to give, well, return back the 44th district back to the people. So we're going to have a fun time, and it's just kind of nice to see some social media folks coming together and plan to have a good time.
What's the website that people can get more information on that?
Really, if you're on Facebook, if you Google or on Facebook search Stephanie and Yuri, Stephanie's Birthday Bash or Yuri Rashkin's Campaign Fundraiser, it's one of those. If you go to I Will Get More Likes Than Scott Walker, both of our profile pictures these days feature the poster for the event. So we're trying, we're doing everything we can, including sharing it with your wonderful listeners, that we're going to have a good time and we want everyone to join us.
Great. Well, thank you so much. Good luck. And we'll talk with you next week. Thanks, Yuri.
Thanks, Sarah. Take care.
Yep. Have a great week now.
Bye.
Bye. That was Yuri Rashkin with Defend Wisconsin Weekly News Roundup. And right after this quick break, we'll have Harry Trivedi, who is our independent candidate running for governor.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. There's something terribly rotten down in Sanford, Florida. That's where 17-year-old Trayvon Martin was shot dead in the street, allegedly by a neighborhood watch captain, George Zimmerman. Martin was unarmed, and Zimmerman appeared to be suspicious of Martin because he was black. It's an outrage that Trayvon Martin is dead today, and it's an even bigger outrage that Zimmerman hasn't been arrested, even though the incident occurred on February 26th. You can bet $1 million that if the roles were reversed, that if Trayvon Martin had shot a white neighborhood watch captain, then Trayvon Martin would be behind bars right now. But when a white man shoots a black man dead in Sanford, Florida, even in the year 2012, the white man still walks free. This is a haunting throwback to the era of lynchings in the South. It looks like something from 100 years ago, but it's not. It's happening now in Sanford, Florida, where there appears to be no justice. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Welcome back to the Sarah Schultz Show, and we are now speaking to Harry Trivedi, who is the independent candidate for governor. Good morning, Harry. Thank you so much for being on the Sarah Schultz Show today.
Good morning, and my pleasure, and thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. Now, why did you decide to run for governor?
So I got just tired of watching the, you know, constant partisanship and the bickering and the lack of ideas, the lack of vision, and really the lack of leadership in amongst the political establishment. I mean, we see that nationally. We see that here in Wisconsin. I mean, it's just a partisan divide. And I thought, you know, I tell the boys that if you want to see change, if you want to really see something different, then you have to step up to the plate. You have to take action. You know, talk is cheap. Talk is free. We can talk all we want over coffee and over the dinner table. But if you want to really see something happen, you have to step up to the plate. So I decided that I just had to do it.
So other than the transparency, is that going to be the one of the things you would work on if you were going to be if you get elected governor? Would you work on the transparency and the openness of government?
Absolutely. I think the government is for the people. I think transparency is an obligation of the government. It's a necessity in a robust democracy. So absolutely, I'm in favor of transparency. I mean, in this current day and age with electronic tools available, it's relatively easy, web-based tools and so on. So I think it is we are obligated to provide transparency to the people.
Now, what issues in leadership do you see, and how would you be different from what you see already out there right now?
So I think what I present is a common sense, fact-based approach. You know, an idea should be evaluated on its merit, not from where it emanates. And I think there is a need for a common sense, fact-based approach. You know, there was a commentator on CNBC the other day and said that who brought this point out quite well, that the political system has become dysfunctional. You know, there is just a lack of, you know, what makes sense approach, and it's just a polarized partition. Either, you know, it comes from here or it comes from there, and you know, there is constant bickering, and you know, things either don't get done or they don't get done correctly. And what I propose and present is a, you know, middle of the road, or an approach which weighs each issue on its merit, regardless of where it, you know, comes from. So, and I think people are reasonable. If you present facts in the appropriate light, I think people are convincible and can be brought to the table, and we can achieve things, rather than this, you know, constant bickering that goes on.
What are the three main issues or problems you would change besides leadership?
So we need to jumpstart the economy. We need to enhance education, not decrease. And we need to improve the level of political morality. We need to increase transparency. We need to have active public participation. And these are the key facets of my agenda. And, you know, how we achieve that, you know, it's laid out on my website, which I constantly update. In fact, I'm in the process of doing so right now. But so these are some of the key changes and the key aspects that are necessary in order for this great state to flourish.
Now, given the divisiveness in our society, how would you bridge the differences in perceptions? Because I feel that that's part of the problem we have. So we're so divisive that it's hard for the leaders to come across.
Right. So I think, you know, that, you know, since I've begun my campaign, and, you know, since I've, you know, put up my website and updated it, you know, I've got a lot of emails from Republicans, Democrats, and everybody that everyone's waiting for a breath of fresh air. You know, everyone's waiting for a middle of the road common sense approach, and as I think, if present data is presented and information is presented appropriately, people can be brought to the table and divisions can be dissolved. So I think it can be done, but there has to be an approach which is a priori not divisive, a priori not coming from here, and therefore it gets knocked down, and the other way around.
So you'd be willing to sit, listen, negotiate, basically bring back democracy then, that's what you're saying?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, to take this, for example, this collective bargaining issue. I mean, the way it was just handled in an autocratic style. I mean, yeah, you know, there are issues, certainly. I mean, there is a, you know, costs are a consideration. There should be the ability to compete for healthcare plans. You know, everyone has to pay a reasonable fair share, you know, because the pot is so much, there's only so much money in the pot, and it has to be, you know, used efficiently. But the way the whole thing was handled is, you know, my way or the, you know, highway. I mean, it was just wrong. So I think if the union leaders, the Democrats, had been brought to the table and everyone had discussed, like, rationally, I think we could have had a solution which would have been, you know, acceptable to everyone. And people realize that, you know, the times are tough, and, you know, everyone has to share the burden, if you will. But the way it was handled was just absolutely, you know, wrong. Now, the Democrats were willing to negotiate. They were willing to talk about it. But, you know, there was just no discussion. There was no intent of discussion.
So how would you deal with some of these bills that are coming in? They're coming from out-of-state areas, like from ALEC. How would you work on negotiating with something like that?
I have no preconceived notions about anything or any organization. So if an idea is good, you know, each idea has to be weighed on its own merit. If the idea is good, we need to talk about it and see if we can make it happen. If it doesn't make sense, like the water ideal, I mean, it just, you know, I strongly oppose it. I mean, it just makes no sense. The disenfranchisement of people with potentially meager means far outweighs the potential for fraud. So in my view, you know, that's just something wrong. And, you know, obviously the two federal judges have, you know, the two rather circuit court judges have agreed with that concept. And so, you know, it came from, you know, wherever it came from, but it didn't make sense. However, there could be another idea which makes sense. And I would be willing to, just because I disagreed with somebody on some other occasion, it's not that it comes from there, so I'm just going to knock it down. That's not going to be my approach. If it makes sense, we would talk about it.
How do you feel that you would be accepted in some of the rural areas in Wisconsin? We have what I see divides, especially at the candidates, where they do very well in some areas and not so well in others. Do you feel that you would be better in rural? Do you feel you'd be better in the cities, in the towns? Or do you feel that it doesn't really matter where you go? It's the fact that you're just talking common sense. Do you think people are just going to pick up on that?
I think people are just going to pick up from them. I've had, you know, emails from rural Wisconsin, from the city, you know, support showing, you know, there's a show support link on my website, and I've had that from, you know, all over the state. So I think it doesn't matter. I mean, they're going to be diehard, you know, people, you know, aligned with one party and the other, and they were never going to change. But, you know, the majority of people, I think, are convincible. You know, the polls show nationally, and, you know, in here in Wisconsin, I'm sure the same applies. The majority of people are independents. That's a growing segment. I was on a plane. I was traveling, talking to a gentleman. He was, for several years, he said, I was a Democrat. But now, he said, it's just everyone, it seems the same. You know, it's just one extreme or the other. And he said that I'm an independent. So I think there's a growing segment of the population who feels this way, and I think those can be appealed to, regardless of where they are.
So you think that Wisconsin's ready then for a common place, and parties don't seem to really matter right now? Because I've noticed in the past that independents have a very hard time gaining traction because of the system, the two-party system.
I think, you know, I know the challenges that lie ahead, but I think there is a place I hope that's a national trend, that, you know, people get disaligned, if you will, from the party politics and weigh each candidate on the candidate's merit. And I think that's coming. You know, it's just a matter of time.
What do you think, as an independent, your biggest challenge is going to be in this recall race for governor? You have only a couple months to campaign.
So reaching out to people and, you know, visibility, because, you know, I don't have the party structure behind me. So, you know, it's me and my campaign and my supporters. So reaching out and making myself known over the state, you know, that's going to be the biggest challenge. But we'll get there. We'll travel all over, and, you know, we'll get there. You know, Bill Proxmire did it. He had other issues. He campaigned with very little resources and was elected and reelected. And, you know, of course, these are different times and so on and so forth. But I think we'll get there. The biggest challenge is visibility, making myself known, you know, throughout Wisconsin.
Well, where will you be appearing next so people can come meet you, see you, hear your message?
So there are, you know, events, you know, all over. There's a, you know, this Sunday there's a event in Wisconsin Dells. There's an event, you know, later on in the month or next month, rather. I just got an email here in Portage, and so, you know, events, you know, keep occurring, and, you know, they'll continue to increase. So we'll keep people posted more and more via Facebook and Twitter, and, you know, and possibly via the website, and you know, we'll be reaching out to communities throughout the state, you know, meeting people. So The goal is to gear up the campaign to just meet people and continue to do so.
And what's your website so people can go and see what you're doing and see where you'll be?
Trivgov.com. So it's T as in Tom, RIVGOV.com. Or if they Google Harish Trivedi, Wisconsin, it comes up very easily.
Okay, can you repeat that one more time, please?
Trivgov.com. So first four letters of my last name, gov, no space, Trivgov.com.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being on the Sarah Schultz Show today. I appreciate you coming on. I'd like to thank you for your courage of running, especially as an independent. And I know you're just being a great example, not only to your sons, but to everyone else who feels that they just don't have a say and they're just not happy with the parties that are out there. So thank you so much for doing this and good luck with it.
My pleasure.
All right.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye. We were just speaking with Harry Trivedi, who is the independent candidate running for governor in the recall election. Up next will be Jenna Pope to talk about her arrest. You're listening to The Sarah Schultz Show with Sarah Schultz.
So there you sit in your cushy chair, just keep on doing all the talking.
Woo-hoo.
I know your plan to take our rights, I'll tell you now, you don't speak for me.
Woo-hoo.
Cause when that voting time comes round, better pack your bags and get to walking. When the big bad boy said what you think, I said see that crowd, they ain't happy.
Ooh.
And we say no, 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 no. We say no, no, you're not the guy for me. No, no. No, 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 no. We say no, no, you're not the guy for me.
Kids camped out through the early hours so the big bad boy could hear their plea. And I got some news, we're fighting this fight. We've worked so hard after all these years. Your cronies laugh and pat your back. Why you think you're such a VIP? So I wrote this song to add my voice in hopes that all the world will see.
Ooh.
That we say no, 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 no. Say no, no,
you're not the guy for me.
No, 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 no. Say no, no,
you're not the guy for me.
Oh,
Welcome back to the Sarah Schultz Show. Sarah Schultz. We actually have Arthur Coles Riggs on. I said get a folk because I had her on originally, and we had to flip everyone around. So now we have Arthur Coles Riggs, who is an amazing audio blogger, audio journalist, a video journalist. I'll get this right eventually with you. You are just an amazing person. You have
Thanks,
a website.
Sarah.
Oh, you're welcome. You are. You're amazing. I know you started with the protests, but I can't imagine Wisconsin without you anymore. And you have a site, Stuff, and I can't actually say the word, but Stuff Scott Walker's doing to our state. So if you put most of that in, it should come up. But you had an incident with a camera. Can you explain a little bit, explain the incident, explain what's going on right now, please?
Yeah. I was in the assembly gallery last Tuesday. It was the last calendar day, or the Thursday was the last calendar day of the assembly session for Walker's reign, and Tuesday was the beginning of that session, and they had a long agenda of things they were trying to push through before they lost their control of the legislature, and I'd spent probably 3 or 4 hours sitting in on the proceedings at this point. I had my camera on the floor in front of me, and then I went out to the hallway, I talked with some people, and as I walked back in, the pages, the assembly page staff had switched, and there was a new page who has never really liked me. We don't get along very well, and so I walked in, and she said, "Hey, you can't have that in here," pointing at my camera, and said that I had to put it away or leave it outside. I didn't have a bag with me, and I told her that I wasn't going to leave it unattended outside, and that I'm allowed to have it with me in the gallery. There's nothing against the rules about having a camera. The rules are against filming in the gallery. She continued to argue and said, no, you can't be in here with that. That's against the rules. I stressed that Republican leadership, Robin Voss, the assemblyman, had said in the newspaper, in the Wisconsin State Journal, that you can ask that when he was asked if it was hypocritical to allow guns in the gallery but not cameras, he said, "No, it's not hypocritical. You can have guns and cameras. You just can't shoot either of them." So it seemed like the rule was pretty clear. You can have your camera there. You're just not allowed to. I stressed what my rights were to observe the government in action, and then a cop grabbed me by the arm and pushed me into the hallway, where we had an exchange. A lot of people were watching and observing. And after that, a little while later, I put my camera as away as I could put it. I put it under. I was wearing a sweater, and I didn't want them to be concerned that I was secretly filming or like looking at the floor or videotaping anything. So I put it under my sweater. Had no line of sight to anything. It was obvious that I had it with me, but, you know, it's protruding out of my sweater. But I put it under my sweater, and I went back in and sat down. The page came up and told me I couldn't be in there. I said that she's mistaken, and that it's my right to be, to watch my government in action, and that I'm not violating any of their rules. And then a police officer came up and asked me very nicely if I'd be interested in leaving. I told him that I appreciate him asking, but it's my right to do exactly what I'm doing, and I have no reason to leave. And then he asked me a couple more times, and I stressed that he asked me because he never ordered me anything. He left the decision up to me every time. And I continued to tell him that it's my right to do exactly what I'm doing, so I don't feel that they have the authority to demand that I leave, as I haven't violated any rules. And then another police, and then he ended with, "Well, that's your right," and he left. So I thought we were on good terms. And then he radioed for backup, and 3 or 4 more police officers showed up. One of them addressed me, said that I had to leave. I asked him what for. He said, "Doesn't matter if I don't leave, he's going to have to carry me out." I was kind of surprised by that because I didn't think I had done anything that warranted being carried out. He ended with, "If you do not stand up and walk out, you will be under arrest." At that point, I stood up, and I walked out with him. As I was leaving the gallery, they put black plastic sheeting over all the windows looking in and out of the gallery, so you can't see in or see out. And so I left the gallery with the police, and there was an ACLU-trained legal observer who was following to keep an eye on, to observe the situation. And as she was leaving the gallery, she was trying to get out of the gallery, Capitol Sergeant Kaufman, Capitol Police Kaufman, held the gallery door closed on her. So the police held her in the gallery. She could not leave the gallery. And she made a stink. She raised her voice, and she said that it's her right to leave and watch how they handle me. And I had not disobeyed any orders. I was complying entirely with what they were saying. And at that point, Capitol Police Officer Calhoun said to me, "That's it. You're going downstairs." And then they started escorting me downstairs. I was objecting to this because I know what happens when they take people downstairs.
And just to cut in, downstairs, and that's the basement. That's where the police station.
The basement of the Capitol is where the Capitol Police Station is located. So then they brought me to the elevator. There, a group of people had kind of surrounded us at this time. They weren't impeding the Capitol Police. They were just following from a distance or walking in front of us. We got to the elevator, and we were waiting for the elevator for a while. It was taking its time, and someone, kind of in, you know, with humorously, but I think they were kind of serious because they were getting kind of tired of this, told me that I should call the police because I was being abducted. I took my phone out to turn it off because I didn't want my phone on in the police station. But so I took my phone out to turn it off, and then they said, "That's it, you're under arrest." And they put handcuffs on me. They brought me to the police station in the basement of the Capitol, and they ultimately confiscated my camera and have held it as evidence ever since. So I have not had my camera back in over a week. And as a result, I should mention, earlier in the day that day, I was at the Dane County Courthouse all day filming a jury trial where the only witness, witness for the prosecution was Capitol Police Chief Charles Tubbs. And so I have video of his entire testimony. Much of it is some of the facts and the things that he says in his testimony are disputed by the people who were there. And the only other reporter who has any video footage of the trial is the MacGyver Institute, the right-wing conservative think tank heavily funded by the Bradley Foundation. And they put up a report, you know, titled "Capitol Protesters Found Guilty," and Fox News picked it up. And so I think it was 3 days ago now, Fox News ran, you know, a primetime segment on one of their shows where they had two legal experts on, you know, discussing the merits of this case. And the only background that these experts had was the snippets that the MacGyver Institute had supplied them. And so this entire time, I have not had access to any of this obviously newsworthy footage that, you know, that's making us getting play on national news from a very biased source. And I haven't had access to my footage to compile or create any sort of an alternative account of what actually happened that day, because the police in question still have possession of my camera and that footage.
What did they actually arrest you with? What did they charge you with?
They charged me with non-criminal disorderly conduct, county disorderly conduct, citation.
That's interesting, considering it doesn't seem that that's what had occurred.
Exactly. There's video that was shot from the assembly floor by a credentialed member of the press, and audio supplied by myself. And I'm not disorderly at all. I comply with all of their orders. Some of their requests I respectfully decline, but no, I was not disorderly, I guess, by any definition of the word. I'm actually sitting in the Dane County Courthouse right now. I have my initial appearance in 15 minutes for this case.
Well, I know we've got about a minute left with you, and I have one question from a caller. Tom, go ahead. What's your question for Arthur?
Well, Arthur, thanks for being on the show this morning and sharing your story with us. One of the questions I have for you, how can we get this message out to the public? Because I can tell you from my travels and encounters with people in the recall movement, there are people on both sides of the aisle who believe in freedom and the open access to our government, the ability to sit in on hearings and make your voice heard and just observe the functions of government. The things yep. that are happening to you are not being brought to the public. And there are many in the general population, including many Republicans, who would find this downright fascist and appalling. What can we do to get this out there?
Well, we have a, I have a Facebook page where I publish all of this, but more specifically, there are several articles written by the Wisconsin Citizens Media Co-op. The web address is wcmcoop.com. We're a group of citizen journalists who have been really dedicated to helping expose some of the, you know, misinformation that's been going on around the Capitol. And there's an article written on that site, Legal Possession of a Camera, and a follow-up one that says, 1 week later, still without his camera, that do a pretty good job of explaining this. There's a video that I created that I think does a great job of highlighting it. If you search on YouTube for illegal possession of a camera, it'll be the first result. So share that with your friends, people who can help. I was on Spy yesterday talking about this. You can share that audio. But to get to the broader audience, I don't really know. That's a good question. Thank you for calling.
Well, yeah, I was going to say thank you, Tom, for the question. And Arthur, I'd like to have you back maybe next week. We can follow up and see how the trial went and see if you get your camera back.
Definitely. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on, Arthur. Good luck today, and we'll talk with you next week, then I'll set that up.
Thank you. Have a good afternoon.
Right. You too.
Bye.
Bye. That was Arthur Cole Riggs. He is a video journalist, and obviously you just heard the story about his arrest and the camera confiscation. And speaking of arrests, we're going to go straight to Jenna Pope because we're running a little behind. Hey, Jenna, how are you?
Hey, good. How are you?
Good. I'm doing okay. Jenna Pope is a activist and a community organizer who was arrested. This was an arrest from August, wasn't it?
August 25th.
You were arrested. You know, why don't you just tell the story, because it's pretty amazing.
Okay, so on August 25th, there was a rally planned, and it was called the Day of Impact Rally. And it was right about the time where state workers got their first paycheck with the pay cuts after the budget went through. And, like, I personally know families who are taking home, like, $1,000 less per month, and that's just ridiculous and unacceptable. So there was this rally planned. About 2,000 people attended. We marched from Library Mall up to the State Street steps of the Capitol. And this was later in the day. We probably got up to the Capitol about 5:30, and the Capitol closes at 6. And so the plan was to march through the Capitol right before the building closed. The police officers knew it was going to happen. We marched in literally like 5 minutes to 6 maybe. And Chief Tubbs held the doors open for us, which was kind of funny. But we get in there, and nobody leaves. We all, I mean, maybe a few people did walk through, but from what I saw, everybody just stayed in the rotunda or up on the first floor. So there was a good 1,000 to 2,000 of us in the Capitol just chanting and singing, and then we started a people's mic, and people were getting up and just telling their stories and talking about whatever they wanted to talk about. And it was really awesome and inspiring. And it had been a while since we had the ability to do that with that many people. And then closer to 7, they started making announcements telling people to leave the building. Some people started to. They started to file out a little bit. But then at that point, our people's mic changed to, well, should we leave or should we go, mic? And so people were voicing their concerns with staying or going. Eventually, kind of like what happened way back when last February, Chief Tubbs convinced somebody to get on the people's mic and really, really convinced people that they needed to leave. So most people did, except 13 of us. There were 13 of us that decided.
Just to let people know, the People's Mic is a... Can you describe real quick what that is so people get an idea of what the People's Mic is so they have a full picture of what you're talking about?
Yeah, the People's Mic, it's where... I explained it a little bit. I'll go into a little more detail. We started doing it when we were occupying the Capitol last February. And basically, you can get in line to get up and speak to everybody who's in the Capitol or wherever you're at. You can do it wherever. So one person gets up and they have like a couple minutes to just talk. They can talk about their story. They can talk about why they're doing what they're doing, why they're involved, why they're an activist. You can really just talk about anything. Usually, like I said, if there's a lot of people, you usually get like a minute or two to talk and then the next person's up. So it's just a way for people to tell their story and get their voice heard by many people at one time. And it's a really awesome idea. So, yeah.
Okay. No, thank you so much, because there's some people that might be listening who aren't familiar with what a People's Mic is, so they get the idea of what that is. Thank you.
Yeah. So like I said, 13 of us stayed. In the end, 7 of us ended up going limp and being carried out, which is an act of peaceful civil disobedience. All of us had training in peaceful civil disobedience. We knew how to do it. And you know, it wasn't just like, oh, yeah, we're going to go limp. It was, no, this is what we were trained to do, and this is a situation where we use it. So 7 of us went limp. The other people walked out. And then in the end, they charged 6 of us that didn't walk out with obstructing arrest. Not sure why they didn't charge the 7th person. They got like an ordinance violation. But we ended up taking it to trial. And I thought we made a really good argument. but in the end, a jury of our peers found us guilty of obstructing arrest.
So 6 out of 7 were arrested for this. And what is it, a misdemeanor, or where does that fall under on this?
It's a Class A misdemeanor, a criminal charge. So.
And all 6 of you were found guilty of this then?
Yes.
How is this different from some of the things that you have been doing with the removal from the gallery and such? How is that different from this?
It's not different. There have been several times where I have gone limp and refused to walk on my own because I felt that the police were not giving a lawful order. And none of those times did they ever try to charge me with obstructing or resisting arrest. Only this time.
Why do you feel that they did it this time? Are they trying? Do you feel that this is their way of stepping up measures to try to stop this behavior? What do you feel is the reason for that?
Yeah, I think you're 100% right. I think I think they decided one time to step up and see how far they could go. I think that was the first time anybody was thrown in jail, possibly. A few of the people were thrown in jail that night. I was not. They released me directly from the Capitol. But I think that's exactly what it was. They were, I can't think of the word I'm looking for.
That's all right. we'll go on. It's okay. Yeah. How many people with you were people of color?
There were 3.
Okay. I know we've had instances in the past where the majority of them were, and so I wanted to see if that was another situation of that, but that doesn't seem to be the case. Now,
3 of the 6 of us were, and those 3 were thrown in jail that night, and I believe there was only one other person that was thrown in jail with them, one or two other. So out of the 13 of us that were arrested, 3 out of the maybe 4 or 5 that were put in jail were people of color.
That's an interesting statistic there.
Yeah.
Now, Now, who do you feel is behind this? Do you think this is the Fitz's? Is this like Fitz's father, who's the superintendent of the state patrol, since they also do the Capitol Police? Do you feel this is coming from DOA? Where do you feel this is coming from?
I honestly don't know. It's coming from the top somewhere. It's not. It's definitely not like the Capitol Police making their own decisions. You can tell a lot of times that they don't want to do what they're doing, but they still do it. So that proves that it's coming from elsewhere. So I don't know if it's coming directly from Walker. I don't know if it's coming from, like you said, the Fitzgeralds or the DOA. It could easily be coming, you know, a little bit from all of them.
It's interesting that they chose that time to start putting people and arresting people and giving them higher tickets than what they've been doing with just an ordinances with the gallery, because there's people that have been going to the gallery trying to take photos, silently taking photos, and they've been being removed, and all you guys have been getting with that is ordinance tickets.
Actually, again, there was one time where they gave us, I can't remember what they gave us. Actually, that time it may have been resisting, obstructing. It was either that or disorderly conduct. It may have been disorderly. But they gave us a criminal charge for that one, and there was four of us. Two were people of color. The two people, it was myself and Jeremy Ryan. Our tickets were dismissed on the initial court appearance, and then TJ&T, they are still fighting their tickets. Which is
still
a criminal charge, again. Yes.
Wow. Do you have any recourse, or is there any recourse to this for you?
What do you mean?
You've got the trial, you have the ticket. Is there anything else you can do other than just pay your fine and move on?
We could technically appeal. And it's been suggested by a few attorneys, including a really well-known attorney in Madison who does like a lot of First Amendment stuff, who's handling a couple of lawsuits for us. And he seemed to think it was a good idea to at least try. But I don't know. We'll see.
Well, I'd like to have you on again, talk a little bit more about this, because this is more of an overall losing our rights within the Capitol.
Yes.
So I'd love, maybe next week, I can have you on with Arthur. We can get an update on him, and you guys can talk about some of the rights that we've lost in the Capitol. And yeah. I say we, not as me, but as everyone in the state, because there's been things going on in the Capitol that weren't going on before Walker came into office that are now going on. So when I say we, I am reflective of everybody in the state. So thank you so much for coming on, Jenna, and telling your story. And
yep.
We'll talk with you next week. Have a good week.
Bye.
That was Jenna Pope. She is a activist and community organizer. And you heard her story about the misdemeanor and how they're upping fines now in the Capitol and some of the things that they're doing. So you are listening to The Sarah Schultz Show. Sarah Schultz will have a quick break. And up next will be Jeff and Lisa from Blogging Blue.
Power to the people. Power.
Welcome back to the Sarah Schultz Show with Sarah Schultz. Now is Jeff and Lisa from Blogging Blue. Good morning, guys. How are you?
Morning.
Morning.
So now, I don't know if you guys heard some of the last stuff we were talking about. I was talking to Arthur Cole Riggs and Jenna Pope, and we were talking about some of the rights that are being taken away within the Capitol itself and just the overall lack of rights that they seem to find out there. And it seems to be an ongoing theme among some of this stuff, and it's not only the rights of the people, but the rights of the media as well. You see a lot of stuff going on with the media that they just don't feel they can say or they don't feel they're a free media anymore.
I'll take that. I think that's part of their own doing. I think when the media doesn't push and the government takes, then they can just keep taking, and then it gets to the point where the media just can't push back anymore. They should, the mainstream media, the main papers, the TV, they shouldn't allow them to limit their access. They need to, you know, they need to combine and work together. When if somebody writes a story that's true, that really hurts these guys, or maybe doesn't make them look the best, and they limit their access, then everybody's got to step up and say, you know, that's not how this works. How this works is everybody has access. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Yeah, and that doesn't seem to be what's going on. It seems that a lot of the questions a lot of the tough questions aren't being asked, especially by mainstream media. There's a lot of, and it seems to be particularly partisan. It seems to be, depending on what you're listening to and what you're watching, there seems to be a partisan bent to it, whereas their guy seems to get a lot of the, how are you doing, how's life, versus the other guy saying, you know, very tough questions. Why did you vote for this? Why did you vote for that?
Well, I think a lot of that, I think, to be fair, I think the main papers, the main TV are more, not neutral, but more corporate media, where they want to keep the people who are in power happy, which is why they're a lot harder on the challengers than they are the people in power. And worse situations reversed, they would probably also change things around, because, like I said, they don't want to lose that access, because that access is what drives their business.
Well, it's the money. Because
right.
of the ads and all the political things that come on through the TV or through the media.
Correct. And part of it, too, is now that we've gotten to so few media outlets anymore that the people that own it are the mega rich who have a personal stake in things staying the way they are.
That's true. That's true. If their guy's in office giving them the tax breaks, then they'll be more than happy and keep going the way they're going. They just want the status quo. You know, the freedoms that I'm talking about, do you feel that those are the same freedoms that the Tea Party is always talking about and that the Republicans keep taking away behind the scenes?
Excuse me. I think that's a little more complicated. I think the Tea Party now and the Tea Party then are two completely different things. I think the original Tea Party, when they actually had grassroots, I think, yes, the Tea Party now, most of those people are gone from the Tea Party. Now you just have some incredibly uninformed and a few led by the crazy rich people who keep doing it. I mean, there's absolutely nothing grassroots about the Tea Party anymore. And if you look at any Tea Party gathering, you're going to see there just really aren't people there anymore. So I think sometimes the media and us in the blogosphere and just everybody gives the Tea Party a little more credit now than they deserve personally.
How so?
Well, I mean, people look at the Tea Party. People, like, look at the Tea Party as a legitimate force, as a legitimate opinion. Where look at, I think it was last weekend maybe, they had a big event up in Eau Claire. And obviously they're well-funded. Everybody knows that. So they had a lot of advertising, you know, this big push. Everybody's so anti-this, anti-that, so this was going to be a huge event. They drew maybe 200 people. And then you look at Lori Compass, who is the anti-establishment grassroots person, who had a had a campaign kickoff in Columbus, Wisconsin, of all places, and drew over 400. So I just don't see the Tea Party, who drew crowds, you know, in the last election cycle, just aren't doing that anymore.
Do you think that some of these right-wing media, right-wing pundits, are starting to fear the grassroots and what's going on with them?
I think they've feared them since last year, February, probably 16th or 17th in Wisconsin. Yeah, absolutely. I think they let that be known, too, accidentally.
Through how would you say that? Is that through some of the attacks that they're doing, some of the harassment that seems to be occurring, alleged harassment seems to be occurring? How so?
Well, I think one way, I mean, obviously there's been, there's been noted times of, like, say, Frank Luntz saying, you know, Occupy is a very scary thing for the Republicans, you know. They get kind of caught on tape by that. And I think other times when people do, Miles Christen pour the beer on Robin Voss, which was a stupid thing to do, but it's still brought up as often as possible. You know what I mean? Like, they take these little events and just run it up the flagpole, and they can't stop talking about it because they know they're in trouble.
Is that why, then, James Wigerton, I believe it's James Wigerton, he's a right-wing pundit and blogger, felt the need to make Blogging Blue and Lisa in particular his new hobby this week?
Well, I've had some talks with Lisa about that, and she can step in if she wants. But I think that's part of it, and I think part of it is, too, and I think they've shown this throughout the country, is there's been a war on women, and I think they really do not think of women as equals. And especially Lisa and Wigerton have a problem because Wigerton controlled his home turf of Waukesha forever, and now Lisa steps in, and these guys have rocked at Drinking Liberally Waukesha, and they've really made a difference. And I think he can see Waukesha turn bright red to at least a purple. I think that bothers him, too.
Yeah, I don't think it's about women at all. I think it's all about Waukesha County. I've been trying to figure out all week what's going on, because this is very strange. On Monday, I posted something written by another author, Dustin Belke, who is a freelance writer, but who also has written for the Center for Media and Democracy. And, you know, bloggers post stuff by other writers. That's normal. Huffington Post does it. Everyone does it. But this time, as soon as I posted that, anyone who retweeted my post received an automated message saying, "This is erroneous," or something to that effect. "Do not share this with other people," which I thought, boy, that's kind of strange. And over the course of the next couple hours, Zach and I received emails from a blogger who was mentioned in the post demanding that we make a retraction and take the post down. And because I did not write the post, I wanted to gather more information. I was not the author, so logically, if there's a problem with something that's written, it should be taken up and discussed with the author, and I was not the author. So there was this fierce urgency, take it down, and I've got all the emails. And just didn't seem very reasonable to me, and I thought, boy, what's going on here? And eventually, you know, after people send you emails like that threatening to sue you, it starts to get to you, and which is probably the intent. So that Zach would not have a coronary in his sleep on Monday night, he decided to take the post down so we could just have some time to figure things out, which is what we did. And the next day, Zach came out swinging with a post about the same group of people. And
I'm going to cut you off. I'll name him. To be honest, the article is about the MacGyver Institute, and that's a right-wing spin machine, basically. You'll see a lot of articles come out from them, and they are kind of a strong arm in the state of Wisconsin. And so this was about MacGyver. Go ahead, Lisa.
Well, the reason I'm not mentioning them is because, honestly, they've got me slightly scared. That's the intent. I'm being extremely careful in everything I do, because anything I can do, they're using stuff that I put on my Twitter account. They're using stuff on my Facebook account. I'm not sure. I couldn't figure out why they were going after me in particular, because other sites like Citizen Action of Wisconsin had posted the exact same post by Dustin Bilkey, and Dustin had gone back and made some revisions. He had corrected some mistakes that were in that post. So I reposted it because the Citizen Action of Wisconsin had it up for over a day with 650 views. No one said a word. Other sites had it up. No one said a word about it. So I thought, boy, why are they coming after me? It didn't make any sense. And I think it's Waukesha County. Waukesha has traditionally been a GOP stronghold, and they know that if they lose Waukesha County, they will lose the state. And it's not necessarily about me. It's about what I represent. In addition to organizing Drinking Liberally Waukesha, I work with a lot of the campaigns, and I blog about it. I share information, and I get the community galvanized, and they can't have that. So I think that's what they're just trying to – they're trying to scare me. They're trying to wear me down, I think. These are my opinions, so that I will either quit blogging or quit engaging. And the thing is, when someone tries to take away my rights, I get really upset. I've had the right to free speech and these rights since, you know, for a long time now, and no one is going to take them away from me. So if they think they can break me by coming after me with lawsuits – well, they're wrong. They can take my house, they can take my car, whatever they want to do. I will fight them because they will not take my free speech.
So basically, Lisa, the freedoms that they're trying to remove from you are the very things that they are basically saying is happening to them, or are saying that they're fighting for.
I can't tell you what they're thinking because I don't know, but I
well,
can tell you
what
that
they're saying, what they're putting out in the media, the freedom, the people that are on one hand doing this, on the other hand are writing articles and putting out papers decrying the fact that they're losing their free speech.
Free speech is supposed to be for everyone. It cannot be for one person or another. And free speech, you know, under the First Amendment, we're entitled to it. It's not just for people with whom you agree. So the notion that any time I come out and write about something that makes someone feel pressured or offended because it's, well, true, that I'm going to get slapped with a lawsuit, that is ridiculous. That is, I mean, is this, do I have to have money to have free speech? Do I have to be able to retain a lawyer to have free speech? That's not acceptable to me, and that's why I'm fighting this.
Well,
and
money...
the answer to your question is yes. Yes, you cannot go out there and say you want your constitutional rights and don't mess with my rights, but then tell me that I can't have any rights to free speech.
On that, I'm going to put you guys on hold. We're going to go for a quick break. You're listening to The Sarah Schultz Show, Sarah Schultz. If you have any questions for Jeff or Lisa, the call-in number is 877-497-1797 or 310-742-1896. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Eric Brandt, host of Civil Discourse, a free podcast that you can subscribe to on iTunes. Mitt Romney won big in Illinois this week. However, it is still uncertain whether or not Romney will be able to reach that magic number of delegates needed to lock up the nomination before the Republican National Convention. The GOP compares this to the 2008 battle between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. The difference is that in 2008, Democrats were fighting over the best choice for a Democrat. This year, the Republicans are fighting for the lesser of two evils, the plutocrat versus the theocrat. The plutocrat has issued gaffe after gaffe. Whether he is flipping his opinion, talking about his vast wealth and friends who own professional sports teams, or how he doesn't care about the very poor, he consistently makes it harder for the average person to relate to him. Then there is the theocrat, who believes gay people are evil and contraception is a license for immorality. It was Romney's campaign that brought all this into light earlier this week. When questioned if the primary process was pushing Romney too far to the right for moderates, Eric Fernstrom of his campaign stated that it is like an etch-a-sketch, wipe the slate clean for the general election. Essentially admitting that Romney doesn't believe in the message he attempts to send, and he is willing to say whatever it takes to win the White House. This is just the type of gaffe that should have everyone thinking twice before they pull the lever for Romney. I'm Eric Brandt, host of Civil Discourse, because it's essential for democracy.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Sarah Schultz Show. Sarah Schultz, we're listening to Lisa. You're listening to Lisa and Jeff from Blogging Blue. Now, I wanted to get back to the question here about these type of alleged harassments and these types of bullying that seems to go on. And you see it with, you have seen it with the recall, and you see it with this. Do you feel, and either one of you can speak on this, do you feel this is a coordinated state and national strategy of right-wing intimidation?
I think it's, I don't know if it's coordinated. I think it's just their personality and how they work things. I don't think they're prepared to sit down and discuss an open, honest debate of their issues. I think that's the only way they know, and I think it goes too deep for it to be coordinated. I don't think they're that good, to be honest with you. I mean, you just look at things that Scott Fitzgerald has done, or just all across the board, and I just think it's just in their personality, in who they are, not necessarily a coordinated, let's try and make this work kind of thing.
So basically, you feel that it's the only thing they can do because they just don't have an argument to pose in this?
Correct. And a lot of them, I don't think, know the arguments that well. I mean, like, look at the way Scott Fitzgerald treated Lori Compass. I don't think he could sit down and tell you, you know, sit down and have a real serious policy discussion with someone. I think he only knows how to bully and control the message. And when they don't control the message, that's when they tend to get themselves in trouble. And that's, yeah. So, yes, I guess would be the answer to your question.
Kind of though that I'll out-scream everyone in the room and eventually you'll just have to listen to me kind of idea.
Correct.
What do you feel that you as a blogger could do to offset some of this or to try to stop some of this behavior from continuing?
I think the best thing we can do is to not let them bully us and to not become silent and to not go away.
Correct. Bullies tend to run when they when somebody stands up to them, and then they try to find a different target. So, as I said, I just think standing up to them, I think Lisa's done a great job of that this week.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think you've done really good with that, Lisa. I think there's a lot that came at you. There was a lot that happened that isn't out in the public right now. So you've done a phenomenal job. You know, it's one of the reasons we're talking about is to bring it out because you'll hear it in different pieces around. You'll hear it. You heard it when they were doing the petition drives and the people were getting in the faces and yelling and allegedly backing up cars and allegedly flapping people's, you know, hands down. And you hear it with some of the right-wing neocons, because not, you know, I don't want to blame all the people with GOP. There's a lot of good GOP people, a lot of good, moderate to Republican thinkers out there, and I'm not linking these guys into it. You just have a handful of rotten apples out there, ruin it for the rest of them. And those are the people I'm talking about. And you have them calling into progressive radio shows or to radio shows where they don't agree with what's going on and trying to cause problems. You have them going around and posting things on blogs. And one of the things I believe that one of Walker's aides got in trouble for is posting things, political things on blogs and such on Time, County Time. You seem to see this over and over, yet it's not really getting out. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to talk about, because it's not just these separances. This is one whole bucket of problem that we're looking at right now, where we're looking at a system of bullies trying to get their way to get stuff done. And that just doesn't seem to be what democracy is about.
And I really appreciate that, Sarah. I think we can take this negative and turn it into a positive. I think if we can start a dialogue about this, maybe we can change it.
I want to say, this isn't all Republicans. This isn't all GOP. But that's one thing we need to do is get these stories out there. And then they got to start policing themselves. if you sit back and let this continually go on and go on and go on and let these guys get crazier and crazier and crazier, then you're just as much to blame as anyone else, I think.
So how would you do that?
One thing is they can't give these guys power. I mean, look at these, look at the people, look at the things being said in the Republican presidential primary. I mean, you for sane people to vote for like a Rick Santorum. I mean, come on, there's got to be some pushback on by the normal party to say, you know, no, that's just, you know, I don't care that you have an R behind your name. I am not going to vote for you. I am not going to support you. I'm not going to give you any of my hard-earned money. I'm not going to do that. And then I guess money talks.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's okay. No, money talks. I mean, as long as they, and I know there's a few people that give a lot of money, but the $10, $20, $50 donations stop, then maybe things will start to slow down a little bit.
Do you feel that some of this is happening, and we'll go a little bit more on the political realm of this, with some of the GOP candidates, they seem to be going pretty far to the right, a lot further than what most of America is. Do you feel they're doing that because of finances and because that's where the money is and that's where they feel they're going to get the most support financially and not, state-wise, not with the people, but with their donors?
No, I think they need to get the crazy part of the party who actually follows it on a day-to-day basis into their camp. Because the money's there. The money will be there, whoever wins. I mean, you look at the biggest donors, not the crazy Foster Freezes of the world, but like the Wall Street money. They give money to who they think is going to win. They don't care. They're not an ideology-driven area of giving, I personally don't think. They give the money to who they think is going to win because that's who they need to work with. So I think these the it's the people who are the delegates and the voters and the caucus members. Those are the people that right now are just crazy on the Republican side, and that's who they're catering to.
You know, they've done studies, and I recommend people to Google this and look into this. It's actually fascinating. They've done studies on the difference between a progressive liberal mind and a conservative I don't want to say neoconish, but a conservative mind. And what they're finding, and I'm just going to go into the conservative area because I found it very fascinating. What they're finding is that the conservatives tend to think on more top-down matters. It's more follow the leader type of ideology. And if you're with a group of people who have that kind of thinking, and so scientific studies have done this, just to follow how people think and why people think the way they do. If you're in a group of people that follow, that put a high mark on leadership and following the leader, how is it that you're going to change if the leaders are all keep going further and further and further to the crazy right?
Correct. And I think you see, when the Democrats had a primary last time with Hillary and President Obama, I think that strengthened the party because people went out and saw these guys like, hey, you know, these guys are starting to make a little bit of sense because they had an appeal to the people, whereas I think the Republican primaries hurt them more because they have to appeal to a fringe that most people that aren't paying attention on a daily basis even know exist. So
how do you feel? I mean, do you I know, I remember when I was younger, I'm trying to find a way to phrase this here. When I was younger and I see, you could just go back and see the speeches from people even before I was born, where the Republican Party just wasn't so to the right of everything. And it seems like since for the last 30 years or so, they seem to be going further and further and further right, and it's been allowable by the Republican Party. Do you feel that possibly the Republican Party now sees that, wow, we're a little too far to the right. These guys, some of these ideas are pretty out there. And do you feel they just don't have a way to really rein them in right now? Do you feel that that's something that Bonner is trying to fight in the legislature, or do you think he's just allowing it to go? Bonner, I don't know how to say his name. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I do think it's got. I think there are some sane people
the speaker,
that think.
I'm not gonna. I don't mean to cut you off. The speaker of the House.
Right. John Boehner. Boehner. I think there's a lot of sane people that think the party has gone crazy. I don't know that I would consider John Boehner to be one of the sane people that want to rein it in. But yeah, I do agree with that. I think that they don't know how to, I think there are a lot of people that don't know how to bring it back in. And I think the original Tea Party could have done that, although I don't think they can do that now.
Well, the people on the fringes are in power right now, especially in Wisconsin. Like Glenn Grothman, years ago, Glenn Grothman did not have the power that he has now, which is scary, in my opinion.
Well,
and just look at the influence that a Grover Norquist has, or a Club for Growth has, or, you know, or a Scott Jensen, who's a multi-convicted criminal, who luckily, with enough money and enough patience and enough shopping for venues, didn't have to go to jail. Look at the influence he has, not only in the state of Wisconsin and the Republican Party now, so yes.
So do you feel there's any way to kind of get us back to a moderate, get us back to where people, what I'm hearing is most people want to see us back to the middle of the road. Do you feel that there's any way we can get there? And as media, how do you feel that you can help get us back to some sort of sane way to walk?
People need to vote for sane candidates. And the way that I can help is by directing people to candidates who are logical, reasonable, and sane.
I think the Republican Party needs to do what the Democratic, not the Democrats, the people did last year in Wisconsin and all over the country. People had enough last year. We hit the breaking point and we filled the Capitol, and that happened all over the country. And that wasn't, I'm a Democrat, I'm running down there. This is, you know what, I've had enough. Things have to stop right here. The Democratic Party followed. They didn't lead us. They followed us. That without the people down there, the senators would not have been able to leave the state. So the voter, the normal people in the Republican Party have to take their party back.
Right, and look at Lori Compass. One of the things that I'm doing to help is by directing people to the facts about Lori Compass. Because if you look, the Republicans are trying to get at her for beeping her horn 16 years ago. And what I can do as a blogger is make sure everybody has the facts about Lori Compass and how she can best serve her district. And that's what I plan to do.
Yeah, I don't think anybody signifies what politics was meant to be by the founders more than Lori Compass, probably in my lifetime.
Well, I appreciate the discussion, guys. I think it's an important one to have, and I think I'd love to have you guys back on again sometime soon and keep this discussion going, because I think it's important that the people of the state try to get their state back.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks, Sarah.
Well, thank you so much for being on. Have a great day, guys.
Bye.
You too.
That was Lisa and Jeff from Blogging Blue, and we were discussing the media and the right-wing media and how they can attack the left. You're listening to The Sarah Schultz Show with Sarah Schultz.
Said a voice out loud. No, we won't take it. We will stand our ground. No, we won't take it. Said a voice from the crowd. No, you won't pass the policy that holds us down. No, sir, no. No is our decision.
Take it, said a voice out loud.
You're listening to The Sarah Schultz Show of Sarah Schultz. And on now is Kevin Kane from the Citizen Action Wisconsin. Good morning, Kevin. Thank you for being on the show today.
Good morning. Thank you, Sarah.
So why don't you take a second and tell everyone what Citizen Action Wisconsin does and who they are.
Sure, not a problem. Citizen Action of Wisconsin, we're an issue-focused coalition of individuals, organizations, we're dedicated to achieving social, economic, and environmental justice. We organize people to make Wisconsin a better place to live and work. And so I am the healthcare organizer for Citizen Action. It has been my privilege and fun to go around and help work on healthcare as an issue. We want to work on issues, progressive issues, to help make sure that there is a progressive voice in these issues that affect us day to day. And so Citizen Action works on issues such as healthcare reform, economic development, consumer protections, voter ID issues, civic engagement. We want to make sure that if we're going to talk about policies that impact citizens of Wisconsin, we want to make sure that citizens of Wisconsin get a voice in all of this, especially.
Ed, I'm glad to hear that there's other groups out there doing that. It's nice to hear that there's an alternative voice to what normally is heard in Wisconsin. Now, I wanted to wish everyone a happy anniversary. It is the second anniversary today of the, I believe it's the signing of the Affordable Health Care Act.
Yes, that's correct. It is the. It's been a big week. Today is the second anniversary, or the second anniversary of the Affordable Care Act. It passed March 23rd, 2010. It's also sometimes known by our current president's last name, but we don't refer to it as such. It is the Affordable Care Act because, in our belief, this law is very, very important to consumers more than just based on what political party people happen to be. We want to make sure we've been going around the state doing presentations, informing the general public what is in this law, and we really wanted to take advantage of this two-year anniversary to really let the public know what is in this law, why this is important to us, why this is one of the largest pieces of legislation, certainly in my lifetime, and certainly in plenty others, too. It's also a really big time in addition to it being the anniversary. Monday is the start of the Supreme Court oral arguments against it. And so the conservative movement is trying as hard as it can to try to stop this law at every single opportunity. The idea being that they hate this law. They hate the Affordable Care Act because their whole ideology, their whole belief is that government has no role to play in people's lives, none whatsoever. This law proves otherwise. This law proves that you can help get people get better access to coverage, make sure that people have better opportunities by making their insurance companies have to compete, in some cases, for the very first time, to make sure that people cannot be discriminated against because they have some sort of pre-existing condition. And the conservative movement, they can't accept this. They can't accept that government has any role to play, and so that's why you'll hear them bring up any type of issue they can think to bring up against this law. And so we've been going around making sure people know what is in it, because while support for the entire law may not necessarily seem that large, the more people actually understand what's in it, the more they recognize that this is something certainly very, very important for people. So I was hoping, Sarah, if you wouldn't mind, I'd love to tell a couple of quick points about what's in this law and why it's so important to the people of Wisconsin.
I would, but I'm actually going to let people know what its nickname is and what you'll hear it on.
Okay.
Some of the right-wing talking points, and like Fox News will have something like that. It's called Obamacare, normally, if you hear the right-wing pundits talk. But the actual name of it is the Affordable Health Care Act or Affordable Care Act?
It's the Affordable Care Act. Technically, its entire name is the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act.
Okay, so that's what we're discussing right now. Okay, now go ahead. Because there's so much misinformation put out about this that I think it's great that you hit some of these points that are really important to the Wisconsin people.
Absolutely. I know that there's a number of friends of mine who are convinced that the conservatives can't even say the word affordable care just because they don't want to validate it anymore. But I'd love to talk about some of the provisions. So there's actually a large part of it that is in place right now, but there's even more coming down the turn in 2014 that won't impact us for a little while. So that's why things may not be exactly as we hoped right now. But things that you're going to be able to see right now today are the fact that children who have pre-existing healthcare conditions, who've gotten sick over the course of their life, or have a genetic condition or some sort of condition they were born with, they cannot be discriminated against today. They cannot be charged more. They cannot be denied. They cannot be excluded. They are treated just like every other child. Now, that's today. In 2014, that's everybody. So I myself have a pre-existing healthcare condition. My insurance company can discriminate against me. They can charge me higher rates and in some cases say they're not going to cover me on certain issues. In 2014, they cannot do that. They cannot treat me differently based on my condition. Another really large part that happened really recently is that young adults under 26 can stay on their parents' health insurance until they're 26 years old. Before it used to be 18, some states had a little bit higher, but now 2.5 million young, healthy adults are now making sure they can get coverage who didn't have it before. So this has become a huge way to make sure that people stay healthy and get the care they need earlier on. Another really large part, this is actually kind of interesting because the Walker administration is trying to block this, but there is a rule in the Affordable Care Act that says your insurance company must spend your money on actual health care. So in when you pay your premium dollars, they are now required to spend 80 to 85% of every single dollar that you spend on premiums actually has to go to health care, not profits, not overhead, not paperwork, not fancy offices, actually has to go to health care. So the Walker administration actually asked for a three-year waiver for Wisconsin to not have that, which would have cost Wisconsin consumers $14 million in higher insurance premiums. We at Citizen Action actually learned they were doing that. They didn't make it public at all, and we promoted it and were able to help make sure that that was denied. Insurance companies now have to follow this rule to make sure your money goes to your health. And we helped break that, and that's the kind of thing that we do here at Citizen Action, is make sure people know what's in the law and fight for consumer benefits.
Now, where would that money – where were they? They were just putting it to the profit of the insurance company then at that point?
Yeah, they were going to have it for higher premiums for people. And so the rule is with this, if your insurance company doesn't spend 80% of your premium dollars on actual health care, they have to send you a rebate at the end of the year. So it's kind of nice to actually get money from an insurance company. But they – so the Walker administration asked to not have that, to take that out, to make sure insurance companies didn't have to follow that rule to the letter, which would have denied $14 million in rebates for consumers. But now we make sure that that part is still in.
What was their reasoning for fighting that?
Their reasoning for fighting that is they wanted to make sure insurance companies eased their way into it. They wanted to make sure that you didn't put this kind of change onto insurance companies so quickly. But here's the thing. Most insurance companies, a lot of them do this already. This isn't a new idea. A lot of insurance companies already spend this much, but there are a few that don't. Our own personal health insurance, for example, didn't do it before and now has to. And because a lot of these are national businesses, they've done it in other states. So this idea that they couldn't do it is crazy because they already have in other states and plenty of other insurance companies do it. So there is no really good argument for why they should be treating consumers like they can charge them whatever they want.
What's the profit of what were the profits of some of these insurance companies in the last year or two?
I keep hearing different numbers for so many other ones, but many of the CEO compensations go well into the millions of dollars. It's they are certainly not hurting for profits, that's for sure. And so we want to make sure that an insurance company actually does what it's supposed to do, cover individuals, not discriminate against them and take out what they consider bad risks and so that they get the benefit of it. We want to make sure that they do what they're supposed to do and actually cover people. And so this is just, you know, some of the many different provisions that are in the Affordable Care Act. I mean, some of the other benefits of it are if you want to get preventive care, if you want to make sure you're healthy today, go to the doctor, go to your health professional. All preventive care, mammograms, colonoscopies, checkups, even birth control are completely free, no out-of-pocket costs, no copays, no deductibles. You want to be healthy, go to the doctor. Because everybody knows that this not only keeps us healthier long-term, but, you know, a cancer screening is cheaper than chemotherapy. We are saving money by actually changing how we address health care. Keep us healthy today, not wait until things get so bad that you would have to cover you. So this has been a huge change in healthcare. I mean, we're addressing how insurance companies treat you as a consumer. We're helping make sure that individuals can't be discriminated against if they've happened to have gotten sick at some point in their life. And we're, you know, helping to make sure that healthcare actually is receptive to the individual, actually helps make sure that you're healthy for the long term.
And it's important because there are people out there who have had health insurance. It wasn't that they were without health insurance. They've had health insurance. They got sick and they lost their job or whatever, went to get other health insurance and were denied because they had diabetes or they had a heart attack or they had cancer in the past, whereas as long as they had continuous health insurance, they were kept on, but the minute they lost their job and then had to go to a COBRA, they were not allowed to get back on. So it's important that we actually get people on health insurance, because it is my understanding anyway, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that one of the raising costs of health insurance is the fact that people are uninsured and they go into the ER for anything because they can't go to a regular doctor because they can't afford it, and the ER has to treat them. And so
Absolutely.
We have a huge amount of people going to the ER for anything from a toothache to they've had cancer for 3 months and couldn't go to a doctor because they've been coughing up things or whatever the case would be. So that just seems to raise healthcare costs a tremendous amount.
Absolutely. I mean, hospitals have to recoup the costs that they get from that somehow. And how they do that, every time somebody comes into the emergency room and is unable to pay their bills, they have to make that money up by charging the rest of us who have health insurance more. So by doing this, we want to make sure that if we have to improve our health care, we have to improve it for everybody. It's none of this, I have mine, you don't get anything. We have to improve it for everybody. And so the estimates that we've seen are between 1 out of 3 or 1 out of 2 people in Wisconsin have some sort of pre-existing condition, have some condition that they said, you know, you had on your own, we're going to charge you more, we're going to deny you, we're going to help make it much harder for you to get coverage, much harder for you to get insurance, whether by pricing you out or completely denying you. So we have a large majority of people in the state, many of whom don't realize it because they have employer coverage, but if they ever left their job, wanted to go start their own company, I mean, think of all the people that don't go and start their own companies because they have that job that has health care. But if any of those things happened and they went to buy insurance on their own, they would be discriminated against, in many cases denied. So we have to, you know, address this discrimination. We have to address this violation of our rights and make sure that more people get coverage so it benefits all of us.
We're going to take a quick break right now, and we're speaking with Kevin Kane from Citizen Action Wisconsin, and you're listening to The Sarah Schultz Show. Sarah Schultz will be right back.
Attention, ladies. Big news on the state legislative front. Republican lawmakers in Arizona and Wisconsin want to help you improve your lives. Or else. In Wisconsin, Senator Glenn Grothman wants to give single moms an incentive to get married. Actually, it's a rather negative incentive, for his bill declares that being an unmarried mother constitutes, quote, child abuse and neglect. Interestingly, Glenn has never been married nor raised any children. But he says his bill is necessary to counter those diabolical liberals who, quote, want children born out of wedlock because they are far more likely to be dependent on the government. Thanks for that insight, Glenn. Now, on to Arizona, where the GOP-controlled legislature intends to help any and all employers protect the moral purity of their female workers, married or not. How? By letting them deny insurance coverage for birth control pills if the women intend to use the pills for, well, birth control. Ladies will not get the cost of their contraceptives covered unless they submit proof from their doctors that the pills are necessary to treat a medical condition, not just for having non-procreative sex. And to add some puritanical oomph to the law, it also eases the way for the state's employers to fire any woman who uses contraceptives to, yes, avoid conception. If that's not perverse enough for you, try this. Representative Debbie Lesko, the sponsor of Arizona's assault on a woman's freedom, privacy, and dignity, says that the law is necessary to protect, quote, our First Amendment rights and freedom of religion. She means the right and freedom of a boss to violate the rights and freedom of women workers over something as purely personal as their sex lives. This is Jim Hightower saying, to keep up with this insanity, go to now.org, N-O-W.org.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Welcome back to the Sarah Schultz Show. We're speaking with Kevin Kane from Citizens Action Wisconsin, and we're speaking about the second year anniversary of the Affordable Care Act, otherwise known as, if you're listening to Fox and others, the Obamacare. Now, what are some of the counter arguments to the Affordable Care Act? What are some of the things that people are saying out there? And you talked about a lawsuit that's going on. Can you kind of say what that lawsuit is actually about real fast for people who don't know?
Yeah, sure. So the Affordable Care Act, as I mentioned, has been challenged by a number of different individuals. It's gone to court a number of times. It's going to start at the Supreme Court on Monday. And so the big argument that the other side is saying on this law is that one part in there that says that you have a responsibility to get some form of coverage. Now, we've done these presentations in all across Wisconsin, met with thousands of individuals and done these presentations with, and occasionally we do get someone who asks us, you know, why should I be forced to get insurance? And so every single time I've been asked that question, I always ask that person right back, do you have coverage right now? And, of course, they always respond, of course I have coverage right now. It would be crazy for me not to have some sort of insurance coverage. Well, here's the most important part. If you have coverage right now, if your boss gives you health insurance, if you have your own health insurance, this law doesn't have to affect you. Your new options are voluntary. If you like what you have right now, they're totally yours. And so the argument that why should I be forced to buy insurance is not the question people ask. Mean to ask. The question they really want to know is, am I going to be forced to lose what I currently have? And the answer is no. You get to keep what you have right now if you like it. If you don't like it, there's something there for you. So anytime someone says, you know, why should I be forced to buy insurance, ask them, do you have insurance right now? And the answer is yes, well, that's not going to impact you. If the answer is no, well, then there you go. We're going to help make sure more people get some form of coverage. We're going to help make sure that it's easier to get it, that you're not discriminated against. So that's probably the most common. They're bringing that in front of the Supreme Court next week, and a couple of other issues related to it. But I should tell a little bit about the legal aspect of it. First and foremost, I'm not a lawyer, but I do want to say that this law has been challenged about 7 times in federal court. And 6 of those 7 times, the federal court has said, this law is constitutional. There's no problem with it. Even Republican Reagan-nominated judges have said, this law is constitutional. And on the 7th time, they said, this law is constitutional except for the individual mandate, individual responsibility clause. But you can take it out, and the law will still stand. So what we have here going into the Supreme Court is the precedent of this law is going to be constitutional, or this law is going to be constitutional if you just take a certain part out, but the law can still stand. So that's what we're going in here with. They're going after it because they don't like this idea that's completely made up, that people are going to have to lose their insurance. But in reality, this law will be constitutional. I'm not at all worried, and it'll definitely go a long way to helping individuals. But I really like the Jim Hightower part. Yeah, that was really great.
Wasn't that? He's great, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
I love throwing him in. He's just got a witty and got a lot of good things to say, and he's a little snarky all about it all, too. So now, why did the people against it keep banging away on it, saying that it takes away their freedoms?
Because their understanding of freedom is very different than my understanding of freedom. My understanding of freedom is we want to make sure more people have the opportunity to go off and be able to purchase or be able to consume whatever it is that they want to consume. You want to be able to get more options to purchase health insurance? You should be able to. You want to get more options to make sure your insurance companies can't deny you? That's great. I want you to go off and live your life and not worry about how insurance companies are going to treat you. That's the way I understand freedom. The way they understand freedom is they want to make sure that no business will be prevented from discriminating against you, that they should be able to deny you whenever they want, charge you whatever it is they want to charge you, and we just have to be at the mercy of what they decide. That's not my understanding of freedom, and I hope it's not a lot of others. I want to make sure more people get covered and you have more options available to you. But that's what they're arguing about.
So this idea of economic freedom is the freedom that they're pushing with the Affordable Care Act. And obviously it's economic freedom for the companies, but not for anyone else.
No, very much so. And we want to make sure that people have more options available to them. And that's exactly what this law is about. They created a brand new set of options for people on top of our existing system. So if you don't like what you have now, there's new options available to them. You have more freedom to choose more things that you want to get. And I think it's actually really telling, too, with Jim Hightower talking about the war on women. It's interesting to note that under our current system, before this law passed, and unfortunately still right now until it's fully implemented, we treat women differently. We discriminate against women because statistically you're more of a high risk. You go to the doctor more. You're much more likely to find yourself a doctor, and so because of that, we charge women more. Different states charge different amounts, but to put it in perspective, a 22-year-old female pays 1.5 times what a 22-year-old male pays, irrespective of how much they actually go to the doctor. It's totally statistical. It's an actuarial number. I personally don't think you should be charged more based on what chromosome you happen to have. So that's why in 2014, just like all the rest of the pre-existing conditions, and I don't believe that being a woman is a pre-existing condition, but you will not be charged more based on what gender you are. So again, we want to make sure we're stopping this war on women that's been going on for a little longer than the last couple of months.
The insurance companies are interesting when it comes to women and insuring them. One of their reasons, and the big reason I hear all the time, is because women get pregnant, so they raise the insurance costs because they get pregnant. Even if you don't get pregnant, you're still in that high cost. Even if you can't have kids, you're still in that high cost. No matter what it is, you are in that high cost regardless of what it is because, yeah, you are a woman. It just is interesting. And it's not just a little high cost. You're talking a huge amount of high cost. You're talking to insure one or two women in a workplace can be $1,000 a month.
Absolutely. And it's quite a bit, and we want to make sure that more women are able to get coverage too. Because here's the kicker. I mean, we don't want to make it seem that going to the doctor is a bad thing. Because women go to the doctor more than men on average, and they should. Men should go more too. In fact, men die quicker, and we end up paying more for life insurance in the long run too. But we want to make sure that no matter what gender you are, you get the access to whatever care you need to make sure that your conditions and your health are taken care of without concern about copays, without concern about deductibles, without concern about insurance companies jacking your rates up more than you can handle it. So we want to make sure that people have more freedom to decide. There's more opportunity.
Where can people get more information about the Affordable Care Act?
The best place to go by far is www.healthcare.gov. But if you would love a Wisconsin perspective in terms of what's going on, how are we going to implement the Affordable Care Act, how are we going to make sure it gets done here in Wisconsin, I would definitely suggest that you go to citizenactionwi.org. You can find out exactly what it is that we're working on and how to get involved and what's going on here in Wisconsin when it comes to health care.
And that's citizenactionwi.org?
That's correct, yes.
Now, you guys released, we're getting off of the Affordable Care Act for a moment. You guys at Citizen Action Wisconsin have a podcast you do. Is it every week, every 2 weeks? Can you talk? We have about 2 minutes left. Can you talk about your podcast for a moment?
Absolutely. We do a weekly podcast. Every Friday we have one available. It's about a half an hour online podcast. You can hear, it's called Battleground Wisconsin Podcast, hearing what's going on from a progressive perspective in the embattled state of Fitzwalkerstown. So we bring on a panel of guests, our own executive director, Robert Craig, our deputy director, Matt Brusky, and then we'll bring on folks like the state director of 9-to-5, Chris Taylor over in the Capitol, John Richards. We'll bring people on who are working on issues that are really important, things like the mining bill, things like implementing the Affordable Care Act. Whenever progressive issues come up, we want to address it every week so you know what's going on in Wisconsin and you can hear it from a progressive standpoint. So you can go to our website and see that every single week.
What's your topic this week?
Our topic this week is partially on the war on women and partially on Representative Chris Taylor's new bills that would help make sure that we continue these progressive policies as opposed to slashing them so much like Walker has done over the last year. It's a great episode. I definitely recommend you guys take a listen to it. So, again, that's at citizenactionwi.org.
Well, Kevin, thank you so much for coming on, speaking about the Affordable Care Act, and thank you for doing all the stuff that you're doing in State of Wisconsin and for keeping up the fight. And I hope to have you on again soon, and maybe we'll talk more health care or anything else you guys are talking about.
Not a problem. Looking forward to it.
Great. Have a great day now.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye. That was Kevin Kane with Citizen Action Wisconsin. Again, that website is citizenactionwi.org. Well, I'd like to thank you so much for listening to the Sarah Schultz Show today. I'd like to thank my producer, Bill, for all his hard work on the show. You can download the show from iTunes or listen to the archive shows at www.blogtalkradio.com/Sarah Schultz. You can also listen to the Sarah Schultz Show off the Sarah Schultz Show app for Android phones and iPhones. It's a free app. You can download it. You won't be able to listen to the show live, but the minute I'm done, it goes into archive, and you can pick up the show off the app in the archive section. So please, if you're out and about, download the free app. You can listen to the show in the car, out while you're shopping, however you want to do it. I had someone who was working on campaigns said she was listening to the show while she was working on some campaign stuff in the background. So it's really a great app, and it's free. Please use it. We are also on 3 stations. We are on WIDE on Saturdays at 6 p.m. That's 99.1 LPFM in Madison. We're on Tuesdays at 1 p.m. on WHYS 96.3 LPFM in Eau Claire. And we're on Sundays at 8 a.m. on WFAQ 92.9 LPFM in Mukwonago, Waukesha. Remember, Wisconsin forward, together forward. Have a great week.